This is Liner Note Leftovers, your weekly musical discovery hosted by 106.1 The Goat's resident crate digger, Dan Soul. Let's dive in.
Good day, good morning, good evening, my lovelies. It is time for another Liner Note Leftovers. We are on episode 16, which means for 4 months, we've been doing Liner Note Leftovers now. So to all 10 of you who've come along for virtual crate digs, for the stories of your greatest and favoritest rock and roll songs, or maybe you just stumbled in here from the Apple Podcast Store and you can't figure out how to get out just yet, I welcome you to the show and to take another adventure with me into the histories of rock and roll. This week, we have how heavy metal is a Canadian invention, or at least the wording of it, perhaps. Speaking of Canadian inventions, we're talking about one of my favorite albums of all time, the Tragically Hip's Phantom Power, which has been called the year zero of the band's discography, and that's the least enigmatic thing about it. We got how Janis begat Stevie, and if you need one more thing to float your boat, how about Phil Collins being the true MVP? All these stories will make sense as we drop the needle and get into another Liner Note Leftovers. Let's go! When you're a young fledgling rock and roll artist, you do sometimes take your beatings. And a lot of people will say, I'm glad I did because I learned something. But I don't know if so many would go so far as to call it the greatest honor of their life. But that's true in the case of when Stevie Nicks met Janis Joplin, for which we have to go back to July 12th, 1970. Now at the time, Stevie Nicks was not of Fleetwood Mac fame yet. She was in a band called Fritz that also had Lindsey Buckingham, who would end up in Fleetwood Mac as well. And they're playing a show at the Santa Clara Fairgrounds with Southwind and Janis Joplin and the Full Tilt Boogie Band, which was, as we know, the last band Janis Joplin was in before her untimely passing. And this is according to Stevie Nicks' account here, who calls this night one of two moments that changed everything for her. So anyways, the show is going along. Southwind has played a little bit over their set, and then Fritz takes the stage. The audience is responding. They're getting some good vibes, which, you know, when you're a young band, that feels good. But Fritz keeps it going a little too long trying to feed off those vibes. Because according to Stevie Nicks, she says, she looks to one side of the stage, Janis Joplin standing offside. And it's hard to hear her, but she is definitely screaming something along the lines, what the are you doing? Get the hell off my stage. In fact, might have even been more crass than that because it was pretty hard to hear at a good gig. Now this gets to the point where Fritz is getting off stage and Janis, not to be outdone, starts laying into him there. Basically, she was saying, when it's time, you gotta get your you-know-what off her you-know-what stage. Now Stevie Nicks says she slumped behind the amps and just kind of took the rant in. But you know what most people would do in this situation, right? They'd take their licks, put their tail between their legs, and go off and hide, right? No, Stevie Nicks hangs around. And 20 minutes later, Janis in her silky bell bottoms, jewelry, feathers in the big hair, hits the stage with attitude, arrogance, fired up. And she says, in that moment, she learned what it meant to have a crowd in the palm of her hands. Now, Fritz would eventually break up a couple of years later, and after doing some time as Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks, they would join Fleetwood Mac. And in the end, Stevie Nicks realized something. She realized from Janis Joplin that if you're gonna make it as a female musician in a man's music world, you gotta be tough, keep your head held high. And that's what everybody's gotta do. Be hard when you gotta be hard, or be soft when you gotta be soft. Also, that second incident that kept Stevie Nicks going was actually opening for Jimi Hendrix. 15 other bands on the bill between Stevie Nicks and Jimi Hendrix, and she says, still, he found a way to make her feel special as an artist, even showing her some love and dedicating a song to her, where she says she learned grace and humility. Combine those two lessons, you got yourself a great rock artist for the ages. Now, hey, I reached into the archives here, found you a cut of Stevie Nicks playing with Fritz, and I wonder, can you hear a little Janis influence here? I, for one, sure can, but let's see what you think.
Take a lead. I catered your thirst, and your wishes came first. But now you succeed in showing your greed. Well, enough has been said. You won't go ahead.
This might might be a bit of a hot take here, but heavy metal might be, at least in part, a Canadian invention. But much like road lines, masks that prevent you from taking pucks to the face, and oh yeah, the entire sport of basketball, we don't get respected for our own invention. Now hear me out on this. Well, Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath were coming up with sort of the sound that would become heavy metal. We were coming up with the name, and it was through Steppenwolf's Born to Be Wild, which was released in the US on July 13th, 1969, and is believed to be the first incarnation of the words heavy metal. Now, some people will tell you that it came from the William S. Burroughs novel, The Soft Machine, describing a character called Uranian Willie as the heavy metal kid, the final stage of doing drugs where you become not so much vegetable as mineral. That's the description of it, but the story might not have so much to do with a novel and more to do with drugs, because this is according to Dennis Edmonton, aka Mars Bonfire, who was the writer of the song. Now, before Steppenwolf was even a thing, he was playing in a Toronto-based band called The Sparrows. Looking for success, they go to San Francisco at the height of the psychedelic 60s. They play with The Doors, they play with Janis Joplin, but nothing really takes off for them. So Mars Bonfire does what any good songwriter in the 60s did, load up on psychedelic acid, buy a used Ford Falcon, and drive off into the mountains and deserts around Los Angeles. The riff came along pretty quick, along with Get Your Motor Running, Head Out on the Highway, pretty standard stuff. But this is where it gets really, really crazy. One afternoon he's driving, bit off of his head, don't recommend it, but that's what was happening, and all of a sudden a thunderstorm comes rolling in and the road turns into a river. The sky goes an ominous color of lead, and because of aforementioned reasons, he's struggling to come up with a word to describe the situation that he's in, and somehow he starts thinking about chemistry class back in high school back in Canada, and the term heavy metals starts coming into his head once again. He gets home, they start recording it over and over and over again. Eventually, he gets kicked out of his apartment for playing the guitar too loud, but the demo of Born to Be Wild becomes a thing. He brings it to John Kay's house, shoves it in the letterbox, and says, "Listen to this." At the time, John wasn't home. His dog Tiffany was home, and the dog went nuts, started biting at the envelope to the point where they thought, Born to Be Wild's gone, the dog has eaten the tape. Luckily, it didn't happen, and Mars Bonfire was driving around in that same Ford Falcon when Born to Be Wild comes over the radio. That heavy metal term catches on to describe bands like Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath, even though they kind of tried to brush off the term before accepting it as their descriptor. It's true, heavy metal was not a well-liked term when it started, but still it catches on to describe the genre of rock music with roots in blues, psychedelic, and acid rock, characterized by thick, massive sound, heavily amplified distortion, extended guitar solos, emphatic beats, and overall loudness. We wouldn't have it without Steppenwolf, a very Canadian invention. Plus, it kept Steppenwolf from disbanding, and the song's writer, Mars Bonfire, from coming back to Canada and working at GM for the rest of his life, which was probably great for him too. Great for all of us, for all the other songs he wrote for other bands as well too. That's heavy metal, but not the heavy metal like we want to talk about.
I like smoking lightning. Heavy metal thunder, racing with the wind, and the feeling that I'm under. Yeah, darling, go make it happen. Take the world in a loving embrace. Fire all of your guns at once and explode into space.
When I was researching this one, I heard the Tragically Hip's Phantom Power referred to as the AD point in Tragically Hip history. You know how time goes from BC to AD? This would be considered year zero, before Phantom Power and after Phantom Power, which was released July 14th, 1998. And I really did like that, because with this album especially, and I don't want to not give credit to Day for Night or Trouble at the Hen House, which was starting to evolve from the Tragically Hip's blues rock basis. But it's truly on Phantom Power that the Hip realizes we can do whatever we want. People love us here and we're not trying to appease to anyone else, so let's start getting a little eclectic with it, a little bit weird with it. Do some things we ain't done before. Really is kind of a look inside Gord Downie's head. You look into the songs and every single one of them has more and more of a subtext to it. I mean, look at a song like Escape Is At Hand for the Traveling Man. On the surface, it's a tribute song to Jim Ellison, who was the lead singer of Material Issue, but also there's references to the impression that he made on Gord Downie. But also you dig further and you see that the song is actually about the camaraderie, the brother and sisterhood that's created when you crisscross the continent trying to be a music man. Or Fireworks, that digs into what just appears on the surface, a hockey game between Team Canada and Team Russia. But actually, if you remember back, that's steeped in lore and mythology. The way that it's strange that not only does this girl not care about hockey, but she almost doesn't seem to care about this battle of good and bad. Or what about Bob Cajun? A song that's not even really about Bob Cajun. Gord Downey just needed a word that would rhyme with constellation. Bob Cajun, constellation. And you dig into this song that's become a At the Cottage staple, and there's references to old British bands like The Men They Couldn't Hang. But you dig even further into the lyrics, and there's calls for anti-racism and fighting anti-Semitism. And that's not even just true in the lyrics, but also you watch the music video. Bobby Baker's guitar has the classic Woody Guthrie quote on it, "This machine kills fascists." And according to Gord Downey, the song is a love song between two gay cops, but that's just one of 17 interpretations because you can't follow the man. And don't even get me started on poets. Is it a criticism of the pretentiousness of poets? Is there a reference to the Ontario Court of Appeal saying that women can walk around with no shirt on? Is it an environmental anthem criticizing the environmental impacts of something called super farms? It's impossible to even scratch the surface on this one, and I could talk all day about this album. Even something as straightforward as the song Something On, which seems like just a simple allusion to the gang being stuck inside the Bathhouse Studios during the freak ice storm of 1998, is so layered in subtext that it makes every listen sound fresh. And despite this album sort of having a feeling of you're either on board or you're not at this point, Canadians were on board clearly with this song. Bob Cajun has become a staple. Poets was number one in the RPM alternative chart and stayed there for 12 weeks, which is longer than any song in the history of that chart. It won the 99 Juno for Best Rock Album. It's gone triple platinum. And every time somebody sees those dials on that yellow cover, Phantom Power, the Tragically Hip, they're intrigued. But one more fun fact, those dials and knobs on there, they've got nothing to do with audio, despite the name. That is in fact a airplane flight line tester. Johnny Fay bought it at a New York junk shop, saying, "I'll just pick this thing up and find out what it does later. Maybe we can use it for recording music." Turns out you can't, it's for flying planes, but at least it made a cool album cover.
So if you do anything after listening to this one, give Phantom Power a spin and just get lost in the lyrics. And here's a perfect track to do it on. This is Poets.
Don't tell me what the poets are doing. Those Himalayas of the mind. Don't tell me what the poets been doing. In the long crashes over time.
I got a bit of a conundrum for you. How do you get thousands of music fans out on a hot airstrip in the middle of July to listen to a live show? Simple. Put Bob Dylan on the card for his first return to the country in over 12 years. And if that sounds crazy, it's not, because it's exactly what happened in the case of the Blackbush Aerodrome show, July 15th, 1978, considered to be the most attended Bob Dylan show of all time, and for a time was the most attended open-air concert of all time in the UK. But I'm getting ahead of myself here. Here's what went down. So this is the idea of a guy named Harvey Goldsmith, who was the mastermind behind the Crystal Palace Garden Party idea. But the Blackbush Aerodrome is a far, far cry from the Crystal Palace. It's an airstrip. I mean, sometimes it'd be used for air shows, car races, that kind of thing. Sometimes it'd be used to show off World War II bombers, including the Henkel bomber they had there that exploded, no joke. But somehow, and a lot of the information of how this happened is lost to history, they convince Bobby Dylan, who's on his 1978 world tour, to come on by and play a show. They get Eric Clapton there as well too, and believe it or not, people bit. They came to a hot airstrip in the middle of July to listen to Bob Dylan play. You know how many came? 200,000! And that's just the people who had real tickets. Other people tried to forge their tickets. Other people snuck through security. Other people climbed the fence. So it might have been even more than that. Crammed onto an airstrip, and people in the back couldn't see because there were no TV screens. So they were hearing Bob Dylan while being miles back on this airstrip. And oh yeah, did I mention this was an all-day festival? So fans had been waiting almost 10 hours to see Bob Dylan. Now, Now, since then, Blackbush has actually been restored. It's an airport once again, including, according to some sources, where the Queen's helicopter used to be based. But for one day only, set a pretty huge milestone. Now, don't get me wrong, I love Bobby Dylan, but I don't know if I would cram in with 200,000 other people at a hot airstrip in the summer to see him, and also probably not be able to see him. Wait, who are we kidding? Of course we would. It's Bob Dylan.
Mama, take this badge off of me. I can't use it anymore. It's getting dark, too dark to see. I feel I'm knocking on heaven's door.
You know, I gotta show respect to my pal Kaylee, who turned me on to this one, but we could talk for hours, days, write whole books about Live Aid. Queen has one of the most famous sets of all time. It's a massive milestone in satellite broadcasting that created the idea of the International Music Festival as a real possibility. Millions of dollars raised together across the seas for famine relief in Ethiopia, thanks to 10 weeks of balls to the walls work rushing to make this happen by Boomtown Rats singer Bob Geldof. But aside from all that, we got to talk about why Phil Collins was the true MVP of that entire concert. Because if you look up the tour itinerary, he played at Wembley Stadium. Well, if you look at that again, you'll notice, hey, Phil Collins' name is showing up at Philadelphia's JFK Stadium as well, too. What's going on? Did somebody make a mistake? No. 1985, Phil Collins is already huge. He doesn't need the exposure, but he knows Live Aid does. So he makes a plan. At his Wembley set, he does a whole bunch of Genesis tunes. He does some of the solo stuffs, like Take a Look at Me Now, In the Air Tonight. He teams up with Sting for a collaboration on Long, Long Way to Go and Every Breath You Take, which is already two sets. Exhausting from a music sense. But this is where the fun begins. Phil Collins gets in a helicopter, flies to Heathrow Airport, gets on a Concorde supersonic jet, jets over the Atlantic Ocean to New York City, grabs another helicopter to Philadelphia, plays another Genesis show in Philadelphia, then he backs Eric Clapton on a whole bunch of tunes, and oh yeah, Led Zeppelin gets back together at Live Aid, but John Bonzo Bonham's been passed away for a few years. So what happens? Phil Collins plays a set for Led Zeppelin's reunion. And according to Phil Collins' account of the day, this is where things get kind of awkward. If you're flying like this, even on a supersonic jet, you got no time to rehearse. So Phil Collins puts his headphones on for a while on the plane and listens to some Zeppelin. Gets Stairway Down, gets Rock and Roll, trains his ears, and he's ready to go. So Phil Collins lands and's like, all right, boys, are we ready to have a jam? Jimmy Page says, what the hell are you talking about, man? This is a Led Zeppelin reunion. Is your head in the game? Have you even rehearsed? Do you know what you're doing? Just being a real knob to Phil Collins, who out of the goodness of his heart is helping this band reunion. So after getting a bit of a lashing from Jimmy Page, Phil Collins talks to the other drummer Led Zeppelin already has there, Tony Thompson, and he says, all right, I've played with two drummers before. It could be a train wreck. Let's play simple and stay out of each other's way. However, that wasn't the end of it. There were issues with On the Fritz equipment. They weren't even sure John Paul Jones was going to show up. Robert Plant's voice was starting to go. But somehow, this was the reunion of the ages. So in between playing five different sets in two different countries in the same day, flying on a plane, and oh yeah, also while on the plane, convincing Cher, who hadn't even heard that a show was going on, to come to Philadelphia with him and come together to do the We Are the World finale, Phil Collins, man, deserves respect for what he did at Live Aid. I want you to listen to this clip. It's Stairway with Phil Collins, and tell me who's keeping it together there. For real, Phil Collins, the true MVP.
And
With that, that's the end of another Liner Note Leftovers. I can't believe we got to this point already, but time flies when you're having fun. Hopefully, you leave today with a little bit more of an appreciation of Phil Collins being the true MVP for Live Aid, Bob Dylan being the true MVP for an abandoned airstrip somewhere in England. That's kind of the same thing, right? How Janis Joplin being completely belligerent was the MVP for Stevie Nicks' career. I tried to tell you everything that I could in our short amount of time that we had to talk about Phantom Power, but nothing will give you that insight better than actually listening to the album. I recommend you do it the first chance you get, after you put some respect on the name when you talk about heavy metal being a Canadian invention. But even if you're not there for any of that, I hope you had a little bit of fun digging into the liner notes, learning something you didn't know before, and hopefully we'll do it again in the next week's episode. And hey, remember, if you got a story that you want to hear on Liner Note Leftovers, you think the rock world should know, always give me a shout. My day job is 1061 The Goat, or you drop me an email. That's danielmsoul@gmail.com. As always, I love you. Thank you for coming along once again. And always grab life and your vinyl by the edges.
That's a wrap on this week's episode. For more musical discoveries with Dan Soul, head to myloydminsternow.com or subscribe to Liner Note Leftovers wherever you get your podcast fix.